This episode of Before the Train Wreck podcast is brought to you by the Grondike Soap Company. Guys, I use Tactical Soap and God of War Beard Oil every single day. Tactical Soap is a handmade natural product made in the United States of America from ingredients you can actually pronounce, not endocrine disrupting chemicals that are going to lower your testosterone. Both the soap and beard oil is infused with bioidentical pheromones that are designed by a clinical psychologist and pheromone expert to maximize attractiveness to the opposite sex. Go visit coopersoap.com and that will automatically apply 10% off your order. Consider grabbing one of the trifecta packs to save even more. If you are a bearded man and want a majestic beard like yours truly, the God of War Beard Oil is hands down the best beard oil product I've ever used. Gentlemen, this is the most manly handmade soap that we know of. Other soaps are going to get you clean. This one will get you dirty. Again, you're going to want to visit coopersoap.com now and place your order. That's Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R, soap.com now. All right. We're live. Welcome back, Amir. What's up, brother?
Not much, man. How you doing?
I'm doing. I'm always doing. We're always doing, man. I feel like I'm a human doing instead of a human being sometimes.
And these circumstances seems that way, yeah.
Yeah, man. So welcome back, guys. We're episode number 50 of the Before the Train Wreck series. Little show cooked up with my friend, Dr. Sean Smith. Hoping to see him back at some point in the future. He's taking a little bit of a break to focus on his own thing. So I got Amir back with me today. You guys should recognize him. I had him on before. We've talked about business, entrepreneurship, Bitcoin, investing, philosophy, government, taxation. You're one of the most well-rounded guys that I've come to know out there. I really enjoy having conversations with you, so I thought I'd bring you on for this one and really just kind of shoot the breeze a little bit about, you know, thriving in an environment of chaos. You know, we've talked about anti-fragility before, you know, the event that we're kind of cruising through right now. I don't think we're supposed to say what the event is, according to YouTube. I heard Brian Rose got his London Real channel taken down or some audio like ripped out of his recent interview with a fellow that was talking about the current environment.
All my videos that I mentioned that got ripped out. Demonetized and suggested to change things. So,
yeah, I don't know what's anyway. So we're not even going to talk about that, but let's talk about chaos today. Right. Cause I mean, we're living in this environment where it's quite chaotic. A lot of people are scared. They don't know what to do. There's a lot of people that are off work. I mean, we saw the unemployment numbers. They're going to keep getting worse. I mean, even in my own main business, like we've had, we basically had to pull back to 50% production. We've had some customers call in and say, hey, I'm out of work. You know, can't do this right now. You know, put me on hold. So we did that. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people that are that were treading water and have been treading water for a long time that are, I feel like now this entire scenario is like throwing them like a 30-pound kettlebell. And now they're trying to deal with a even more difficult situation to keep their head above. What have you seen out there, by the way?
Despair. So there's two types of people I see. I see the people who are, well, let's kind of rewind. We have the fight and flight, you know, sympathetic versus parasympathetic system. And depending on your past, the context, all these different things make you who you are today. And, a lot of people are stuck in the flight mode. They are scared. They have a scarcity mindset. And when you have that, you're very depressive. And so basically what they're in fear mode right now. The zeitgeist is fear. And so this is why you see a lot of people clamoring and pushing the government for, at least in Canada, they just announced the CRB today, their economic relief plan. Which is, by the way, the most you want to hear something dumb. So
I don't tune into this stuff. So fill me in on what the details were.
So I have an assumption or I have a thesis that there's the reverse logic department in the government. A whole department, the reverse logic department.
Yeah. It almost sounds like a Monty Python movie now.
For sure. Okay, so the CRB comes out. Get this. I'm like, that makes sense. Like when I read, I'm like, that's
which department is the CRB?
Well, it's just the Canadian Economic Relief Benefit. Like it's okay. And so states, okay, so Rich, you still make a little bit money, right? So you're not entitled for any relief. But me as Amir, I'm broke. I make no money. You can get whatever you want. You can get your 2K, but you Rich, no.
Yeah.
You're still making something. You get shit. So I'm like, genius logic. So help people out that have nothing, but the people still promoting and supporting the economy and working to pay the bills, they get nothing.
Yeah.
Great logic.
Yeah. What do you think of universal basic income? Because that's supposed to like solve that and just give it to everybody.
I just made a video about this. So let me talk about it. Universal basic income will happen regardless. It's going to have different deviations and formats of universal basic income.
I think it's going to happen too. Yeah.
It's going to happen. And we're entering a stage of MMT theory. So modern monetary theory. So how the Fed works right now is you have the Treasury. The Treasury goes to the Fed. The Treasury must put up some collateral. Right now, they're even talking about equities as collateral. And so basically, you got to put up equities or bonds or any types of collateral for the Fed to print up money. MMT removes the collateral aspect of printing money. There's no collateral. It's mm-hmm. print as much as we want. It's digital. We can print 10 trillion. We can print 100 trillion. And before with quantitative easing in 2008, what happened was we did quantitative easing. Quantitative easing went to Wall Street. The problem was in 2008, Wall Street got hit. What's happening today, Main Street got hit. So small business owners, medium-sized business owners, you're pretty much telling the whole world to pause up to a month. What do you think is going to happen? Of course, are people going to default? People aren't creating income. If you look at the stats, the small business usually only has about 2 to 4 week runway of cash. Mm-hmm. And so that's dried up. They don't have no runway anymore. And the profit margins are yay small. And so basically what we're heading into modern monetary theory where they are doing helicopter money, where they will drop everybody some type of UBI, let's say $1,000 a week, hypothetically. But there's also no free lunch, right? There is no free lunch. Milton Friedman talks about everything comes at a cost. So where I see where we're heading to a caste system. And so if we thought that income inequality-
caste or cash?
Caste.
Caste, okay.
Like the Indian caste system or so in India, you have caste system, you have different levels of society. Mm. Or if you want modern day version, you have in China, the social credit system. So if you behave as a good citizen and you pay everything and you stay in line as a good little pleb, you get access to the high speed train. You have access to healthcare. You have access to education. You step out of line. We decrease your social credit system. Guess what? You have no access to anything.
And who gets to define what in line and out of line is? I guess it's the government too, right?
Oh, yeah. So I'll give you a hypothetical situation with the UBI. Here's Rich, here's $1,000 UBI under these conditions, right? Your kids have to be vaccinated. You have to pay taxes on X, Y, and Z. You have to do this, you have to do that. There's going to be stipulation with that money. And if you don't follow these stipulations, you don't have access to the system being the whole that we offer you. Mm-hmm. And so basically it becomes condition. It's almost a house giving you money like in the casino. The house always wins. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have a whole society programmed to accept these little breadcrumbs for the government. And that's going to cause a lot of psychological issues. Now, beyond the psychological issues of UBI, short term, it's beneficial. Short term, we're going to get a honeymoon effect. We have all this money coming in. Long term, you're going to have massive inflation. Huge. Because what's going to happen is you have now more cash fighting for the same amount of resources of commodities. What do you think is going to happen? The price is going to go up.
So do you think the UBI is going to be facilitated through government printing, or is it going to be facilitated through massive companies like Amazon and Apples of the world that automate and roboticize many processes and systems so they can basically just throw money into the tax system and send these people home? Like, where's this money supposed to come from? Is it
money's going to come? Money's directly going to come from the Treasury right to your pocket.
So printing
and, printing, and they're going to tax you the money they give you.
Yeah.
The CRB, they tax you.
It's $2,000 for the individual here, from what I understand, monthly. And I don't know how long that's supposed to run for, but I'm guessing
4 months.
4 months. Okay.
Yeah.
And I know that the small business fund is something like $40,000 and it's interest free, and 10,000 is forgivable.
First year.
Yeah. And it's 10,000 is forgivable if you pay it back before the end of the year. It's so weird to me because I've been watching the stock market for the last couple of weeks, and I was predicting when this started to correct. I was looking for a buy-in opportunity under 18,000. First, it was 20,000. I thought, okay, it's going to be 18,000. I thought, okay, you know what? I'm looking at the prior correction in 2008. It even could go as low as 16 or 15,000 with the Dow specifically. Mm-hmm. And then it got down to around like just under 20, and then it's bounced back since then. And it hasn't really dove back down. And it's like, I don't think people realize that, you know, you can pump in and buy some of the market, but there's nothing support in any of that, right? Like if you go out today, I don't know how often you've been out. Like, have you been out anywhere? You kind of like just, no?
Out my door to grab some food and back. That's it.
Yeah. Like I order most of the stuff to my house now. And I haven't, I've tried to avoid shopping or going to grocery stores and stuff like that. I had to go to the Home Depot the other day and they're closed. So they have curbside pickup. Cause I had to get something to, I don't know if you can see, but the wall behind me had a big hole in it. So I figured I might as well fix that. Right. So I had to go get this like putty and stuff and they wouldn't let me go in the store. They're like, it's closed, but you can order it online and then you do a curbside pickup.
Yeah.
And that entire process for like an $8 box, product, I had to drive all the way home, order it, wait 3 hours to get an email. The email confirmation says, okay, you can pick it up. You go there. You wait another 40, 45 minutes for them to come out and put it in your car. There's all these people along the way verifying who you are. Are you okay? Do you have any symptoms? It's like, I don't think people understand how serious and how bad this is. The unemployment numbers are not fully reflected yet, right? Like this chaos is just starting to unfold, right? It's just starting to unfold. I think it's going to be another month or two before we really see a bottom in the market. It might even be longer.
Well, if we look at a couple examples. So if we look at 08, we look at Japan, we look at the 80s, and we look at, it's a little bit different right now with the virus because of the supply chain.
Well, this is the first time in history we've had no supply and we've had no demand. Well, reduced supply and reduced demand. Mm-hmm. And all I hear out there on social media sites is people complaining that Barbados couldn't get like 7 respirators.
Ventilators,
right? Is what social justice warriors are worried about right now. Trump's a bad guy and they couldn't get 7 ventilators to Barbados because they paid for it. But there's something big that's about to unfold that you haven't even seen yet here.
Yeah, I think the market is way overpriced. I think we're in a dead cat bounce right now.
Yeah.
Based on what I've been looking at, I think we have a long way to go down. I think when people think this is the worst, get ready. Get ready. The thing is, let's remove economics from this for a second and talk about psychology. The mimetic zeitgeist is fear right now. People are scared. People are trying to figure out, how can I pay for my house over my head? How can I get food? Beyond just the Maslow hierarchy of needs of survival is also the fear within, like, oh, can I contract this? You know, is it safe for me to go out? I can't be around people. Yeah. So the fear mindset has set in, and it takes a very long time for the zeitgeist, the mimesis, to have a tipping point to reverse the other way around into positivity. And so it's here, you know, the depression will set in. And so I think we're going to see a massive amounts of economic collapse, rent, real estate, produce. And I think people just need to prepare. Like everything is set in motion already. There's no turning back right now.
What should people be doing going forward? You know, some actionable advice, because, you know, I titled this on making better choices and sort of dealing with chaos, right?
Well, number one, like, let's
stop freaking out, first of all, because it's beyond your control, right?
Number one, turn off the news.
Yeah.
Fuck the news. It's not healthy for you. Number two is...
Do you have cable?
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
I think I canceled mine like 7 years ago. There's nothing on cable that's of any use to me.
Yeah, it's garbage, man.
Yeah. Okay. So turn off the news.
Turn off the news. Reconnect with your family. If you have a good relationship, you know, it's a good time to reconnect with friends and family. Number three is audit your finances. So reduce burn as much as you can. A lot of people live beyond their means. So figure out, like, why do you need a car? If you're in the city, do you really need a car? Do you have kids?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a car. 7 years, I don't have a car. I don't need a car. Anytime I need something, I rent something, and I have a fucking cottage even.
Mm-hmm.
And so reduce your burn. Number three, audit your situation. Be like, okay, this is something that I have to deal with. These are the facts. I may have lost my job, but this, for every door that closes, another door opens. These are opportunities for you.
Let me ask you this question. Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that have been sent home and they're laid off, and they're probably hopeful that they're going to get their job back. You know, they're going to get recalled at some point.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's a percentage of people, and if there is a percentage, what do you think that is that will never get called back?
80%.
You think 80% won't have a job in a few months? They're just not going to get called back. They'll be obsolete, automated, outsourced, canceled, whatever.
80% of workers are commodities. They have zero value in a workforce.
Why do you believe that?
Because whatever they do, a robot can replace them with or outsource them to India.
Yeah. I think that a lot of companies as well. I mean, I'm an employer. I've been an employee. I've done both for a long time. And I think that a lot of companies are going to start to realize there's a certain percentage of our workforce, whatever that looks like, that we're not going to call back. It's just not needed anymore. And those numbers haven't even been reflected yet. Like, we don't even know what that looks like. I don't know if it's going to be 80%. I think that's a bit of a stretch. I was thinking more along the lines of like 15 to 25%.
I think 80, because you look at service work, which got hit the hardest. So events. You think people have money to go back in restaurants or have the trust to go back into big crowded places?
Well, the trust is down and money is obviously, it's not as abundant anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's obviously going to be a lot of people that are going to be, suckling on the teeth of the government because there's $2,000, right? I've seen people making less than what the government's going to hand out for free.
Of course.
They actually got a pay rise by being sent home.
And this is where you create a two-tier system of plebs who will accept it. It's 80-20. I always believe it's 80-20, like the Zipf's law, power laws. You have 80% of the, let's say, community or Canada residents. They will accept the $2,000 because that gives them more money than if they were working, and they will follow all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not happy, it's on them. They have to step outside of the line and be like, I don't want to accept this $2,000. There's so much more opportunity out there.
What should people be doing right now that have been sent home, that have been laid off? Like, what do you think that they should be doing with their time?
Building skills, man.
Like what? Like what's an important skill for the next couple of years?
Meta learning, hands down. The ability to pick up knowledge that really matters for a domain. And so people like to be very tangible and focus on like a specific skill. Like,
yeah,
I'll give you an example. I fucking hate it all the time. Learn to code. Listen, I understand code. I can code. I fucking despise it. Mm. I despise coding with every aspect of it. I hate sitting down and coding. I know how to do it. I just hate it. So I'm not genetically and mentally designed to code.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole notion of like, well, because learn to code, everyone, no, man, all humans are different. So, but the ability to meta learn, the ability to look at the fundamental principles of a subject matter, to look at the key things that matter in that, that's a superpower. If you can have the ability to absorb knowledge quicker.
Camera won't focus.
I have that problem all the time.
Stupid.
I think just put your hand up. Yeah. There you go. No? I think your face has to go up on it.
There we go. How's that? No.
I don't know.
Oh, well, I'll be out of focus. I'm nothing to look at anyway. You're much better looking. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so meta learning, man. Meta learning. The problem with most people, they need direction.
Yeah.
And their whole life, they've been pampered or told to go to school or be a little good boy or girl and follow instructions.
Color within the lines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Listen, man, human beings by nature, we're nomadic. We're hunters and gatherers. And the reason why we conquer the earth is because of we're bipedal, we're nomadic, and we hunted prey around the world. And we went through, fuck, man, the amount of extreme situations that we've been through, it's insane. And so we are accustomed to really challenging ourselves as human beings. The problem today is we become mediocre. We become complacent. We become too, I would say, mentally lazy because we have all these, let's say, modern things around us that make us complacent to society. And people complain now. I always tell people, like, imagine going through World War II. Imagine going through World War I. Or imagine being in Syria right now or some war-torn country. Like, what the fuck? Like, I'll take this any day than fucking being in Syria right now. Having bombs dropping over my fucking head. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have a grandfather. My grandfather died because of a bomb in World War II. 30% of my family is dead from the Yugoslavian war. Like fuck, we got it easy. It's like, oh, we don't like economics. Like,
yeah, we talked the other day about your family fleeing communism. That's from like last week. What do you think of Chris's question over there or thought about if we're going to see an exodus from big metro areas to more rural suburban areas. What do you think?
I've been saying this for a couple of years. I think we will. It's not going to happen all of a sudden in like a big splash. I think there's going to be ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
And obviously it matters on where you are in your life, family, friends, kids. And so it takes a certain type of person to opt out of this city life into a more kind of suburban or rural type of small town. And so you got to plan, you know what I mean? Like it's part of my plan too. You know, within the next 2-3 years, I'm gone, man. Like gonzo.
Yeah. Where are you going to go, up to the cottage or?
Maybe BC, or, you know, back to British Columbia and do like a 6-4 month split. So 4 months, escape winter, go down south and then come back to Canada during the summertime.
I remember you were in Kelowna for a bit. We have a couple of mutual friends out there.
Kelowna's great. It all it's pros and cons of Kelowna.
We're not going to talk about that right now. But so I think people are going to spend less time in urban centers because there's, I mean, we're watching what's happening. Oh, there we go. It's focused. Because I mean, we're watching what's happening with New York with this situation. We're going to call it the situation. I feel like the guy from Jersey Shore now.
Yeah.
You know, with the situation.
He should brand himself more, man. Opportunity right now.
They actually had that guy on a news interview and he was talking about the situation in the interview. It was hilarious. Anyway. but I totally agree. Like, I think because of this situation and the way that we're seeing things in New York City, you know, the whole romantic appeal to giant urban massive city areas is going to be a lot less appealing in the future.
Well, Rich, let me ask you this. The average Canadian household is 60K income.
Yeah.
Average. The medium household price in Toronto is about $1 million for a piece of shit. Like a shit box.
Yeah.
How the you just do the math.
Yeah, I know. I know.
You can't.
And there were still bidding wars on real estate up until about a month or two ago. I called up my real estate agent when this started to go into like lockdown mode for us. How long has it been? 2 or 3 weeks? I can't even remember. What's it been?
March 10th, I think. It's been a month now.
So it's almost been a month. So I called my real estate agent. Then I'm like, what's going on with the market? What are you seeing right now? He goes, we're going to have to wait for another month or two just to see how things start to respond. So I got to follow up with him to see where he's at with, you know, with listings and closings and biddings and stuff like that, because I like to keep my finger on the pulse of things. I think the market's going to slow down a lot. I think it might even go down even further than what we've.
We need the ripple effect that hasn't hit yet. It's going to be a couple.
What do you think the ripple effect is with all this chaos? I mean, like, we're talking about real estate, we're talking about stock market, crypto issues. We got
everything.
Talking about companies not hiring people back. Mm.
Okay, so everything is hinged on the American dollar. So that's a focal point.
It's still the reserve currency today.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a couple of theories to bring in. You have the milkshake theory that Brent Johnson talks about.
What's that? If you can break it down.
So the milkshake theory in a nutshell is pretend United States has a big milkshake. The U.S. is the hedge currency of the world. All debt is denominated in U.S. Government bonds, T-bills, anything is denominated in U.S. At the end of the day, of a liquidity crisis that we're having right now, the number one resource to have is cash during a liquidity crisis, and the USD is king of that. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at the Forex markets, you see what's happening. U.S. is having a premium on all other currencies. The Canadian dollar is getting wrecked. The Australian dollar got wrecked. Even the euro is decoupling on that. And so basically what happens in a short and medium term aspect is, since U.S. has a premium, it becomes the milkshake of liquidity. It sucks up all other currencies around the world and devalues their currencies. At the exact same time, it also creates issues when it comes to trade, and it creates issues when it comes to importing, exporting for businesses doing business with the states, because the state might have the United States has a 40% premium on your dollar. What the fuck do you do? Mm-hmm. Right. And so for short term and medium term, the States is actually good. You're going to see a propagation of more value. People will be running in to dump their money in the United States. You have the military, rule of law, and you have the US dollar that's hedged. But long term, who knows what it is? Maybe it's 2 years, 3 years. We don't know. Long term is inflation, hands down.
Yeah. I mean,
complete inflation.
Yeah. You can't make that much money out of thin air and not inflate the economy. Kipling says, Any thoughts on divorces? Is it cheaper to get divorced now? I have some thoughts on that. I'll let you hit on that.
Yeah, first. Just claim bankruptcy and be like, oops. Is that a strategy, actually? It should be.
Not really. I mean,
really?
You can go bankrupt on any unsecured debt. So I've seen guys that have gone through a divorce, they're on the hook for 80 grand that they never really charged up. You know, it's because of their spouse's spending habits, and they'll just go bankrupt because they got nothing to lose after the divorce process. But as far as divorces go, I think you're going to see an uptick, because from what I understand from the divorce lawyers that I've spoken to, their busiest time of the year is the end of the summer. And that's usually because families are done with their summer vacations. They've come back from the cottage. They've done their European trip to see family, and they've gotten on each other's nerves after like a month or two in the summertime, or just after the Christmas holidays. So in the new year, so New Year's resolutions, they're tired of their spouse over the holidays for the last 2-3 weeks. We've been in quarantine for almost a month now. A lot of people said, oh, we're going to have a lot of babies coming out in 9 months. You might get some, but I don't think so. I think you're going to see a lot of relationships really tested, because whenever there's stress.
Did you see the Chinese figures, though, for divorce?
What's the story on that? I bet it's going up.
70% increase.
Yeah, there you go. I called it. Yeah. And they've been lying about their numbers the whole time.
Oh, right? Fuck.
They've not been truthful about the.
A billion fucking humans, and you have how many? Come on, man.
I mean, the U.S., according to the stats on that website that tracks everything that's reported daily, I mean, the U.S. surpassed everything in China within like a month, right? And it's still exploding, right? So that was obviously an issue. But yeah, I think that like one of the things that happens to relationships is whenever there's stress applied to them, that's when they start to fall apart. So you have the stress of one or potentially both people getting laid off. They're in the same house all the time. They're not supposed to leave the same house. Dude, I can't even walk through the golf course anymore. There's a golf course that's right behind my place, and they quarantine that area off, right? Because there's too many people driving over to it, parking their cars and walking through it. They were getting damage to it, so they shut it down.
I was in the park doing push-ups and a cop came.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't.
I was by myself, though. No one around me by 100 meters easily.
What did he tell you?
No, he's like, give me a look. And I'm looking at him like, get the fuck out of here. God, the fuck is this? Fucking Nazi Germany? What the fuck?
Honestly, dude, all I can do right now to get outside is either go outside and do some gardening, clean up the yard, or I get on my bike and I go for a bike ride. And
it's crazy, man.
I mean, you can't go anywhere else. Everything else is closed, right? I mean, the chaos literally has not even started. People think this is bad. It's inconvenient. I can't get stuff. I'm stuck at home with my spouse. You haven't seen anything yet. You really haven't seen what the total outcome of this truly is. It hasn't been tested. We've never seen this before. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be good. I mean, you should be preserving financial resources. You should be limiting things that you don't need if you haven't prepared. I mean, I'm in the debt business. I've done that for almost 20 years. We've saved people over $100 million, right? Like, we've done this for a while. And the vast majority of people, in fact, I'm going to say almost all of them, don't have a rainy day fund. I don't think many people have a rainy day fund.
Stats are in. It's $400.
And most people think, oh, well, you know, like a rainy day fund is like, you know, 3 months of income saved up. No, it's not. That's not enough. I mean, you're going to see it's not enough right now, because as 3 months go by, it's going to evaporate, right? And there's always surprises that come up. You should have minimum 6 to 12 months of income. Mm-hmm. You know, living expenses saved up. And even that, I don't believe is enough. I mean, you ideally want to get to a place of anti-fragility where a situation like this makes you better.
Yeah.
Right.
Especially if you're a single male, that you don't have a kid and you're the only person you're dependent on yourself, bro, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
You can live outside on the streets. You can go, you can do whatever, you literally have no responsibilities but yourself.
I know guys that have lived in their van, right? You know, just to kind of like, hey, I want to live in a van. I want to travel around the world or travel.
My boy's doing that right now, man. He sold everything. Yeah, he's in BC, man. He just got himself a van. He's going across Canada. He's like, fuck all this shit.
Yeah, I know a couple of guys that have bug out bags ready. They got a bug out van packed to go. It's like their camper van, and they can sleep in it. They can cook in it. They have, you know, sustenance. They know how to hunt. You know, they know how to survive for themselves.
Yep.
I mean, if you're a young guy and you're 25, I'm not expecting you to have it all together and have a year's income saved up or have a bug out plan or anything like that. But if you're an older guy, 30, 35, 40, 40, you know, 40 plus for sure, you should have yourself in a position where something like this does not really affect you. It should be mostly indifferent.
Yeah. And if it did affect you, which it probably did, you need to reevaluate what you're doing, make this an opportunity, make this a silver lining, because the reality is business does continue. Money needs to flow, capital needs to be made, yield needs to be produced. And so don't be sold the bullshit stuff of like, well, I went to school and I thought X, Y, and Z is going to get me the up. You know, go where the money is, man. Like there's that saying, I study him a lot, but people misinterpret what he says. You know, Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss at the beginning. He actually changed that afterwards to follow your blister.
What does that mean, blister, then? What did you know, like, the hero's journey is a great piece. I mean, there was even a movie done on it too, right?
Yeah, it wasn't that. It was good, you know.
I mean, the story of the movie kind of broke it down. You can
follow your bliss. People are like, well, I'm do whatever I want. I'm like, yo, dude, doing whatever you want if it has no economic value means fuck all. You can do whatever you want once you have economic value. Yeah. And so when he changed it from follow your bliss to blister, meaning pain, you must endure pain and turmoil first to get to your bliss. And so right now we're at a precipice. I think millennials primarily right now have the most golden opportunity to capitalize on this because they don't have nothing to lose. They don't have assets. They don't have money. Great. You're the fucking underdog fighting. You're the Rocky. Mm-hmm. You're the fucking Rocky right now. You have nothing to lose. It's only upside for you. Literally all fucking upside from now on. The people that have a lot of value, they have everything to lose, whether it's assets or businesses, etc. And so look at economic opportunities. Look at what listen, capital doesn't just disappear. Capital flows. Businesses flow. Economies change. Industries change. Trends change. They're always there. And they're becoming more streamlined with online. You need to go where capital flows and eyeballs go. And so figure out how you put yourself in there. Like, you know, I always tell people, if I started from zero, I would be sales and commission from day one. Every fucking company on the planet, guess what? Needs to make revenue. Everybody. And I would love
to hire a guy like that, but they're impossible to find. Everybody wants a salary. And you said something the other day. I think you said there's the two most addictive things to humans on this earth are heroin and a salary.
That salary. Yeah.
Right. Why did you say that about a salary? Like, why is that such a problem for people?
Because they are addicted to the dependency on something predictable. And the fact that they know for a fact they can put X amount of energy and time into this one thing, and every single 2 weeks is a paycheck. And that is their anchor and peg on the whole psychology and viewpoint, how they view the world, their perception of the world. Mm-hmm. You eliminate that like a Jenga piece, the world falls apart. Now, if you're not attached to a salary, sky's the limit. Obviously, yo, listen, context matters. If you are a father and you have to put food on the table, I would say if it's even more imperative for you to become a more grinding, more hustling. The fact that if you just lose your salary and that means you can't put on the table food on the table for your daughter or son, that's kind of fucked. You should be making multiple streams of income. You should be grinding. You should be hustling in anything, whatever. Like, I would literally sit back like, okay, what natural gifts do I have as a human being? What experience do I have? What skills do I have? Let me audit what's happening around the world. Let me see what businesses are looking for. And let me see where I can interject myself and actually learn fucking some skill sets or meta learning, whatever you want to do. And then actually create something that is transferable. The problem with a lot of people's jobs is non-transferable. So you go into like regular HR job, or you go to some type of job that literally you got to do this. That's not really transferable to other types of industries. Why I brought up
80 words per minute is not transferable. That's a skill they told me in school I need, Amir.
You know? How could you
possibly be wrong if my teacher told me that?
Man, I went to the wrong school then.
We got a question here from High Value Mail. Thank you for the super chat. He says, 100 grand in cash, 20K car debt. No
sell
other
the car.
Ideas. Yeah, why would you have car debt? That's sell not the particularly car. Cheap Dollar. Debt. Yeah, unless you've got it financed at like 0%, right? That's the only way that I would even take any kind of car debt on. It's an interesting question. I'm gonna post the join link in a bit so you guys can hop on a stream and ask questions live.
Yeah, I would put that cash in USD for now too. I would switch.
Yeah, hold it in USD, or if you know, gold or silver still looks like something you can grab. What do you think of the price of gold or silver as a commodity right now?
I think gold and, see, the misconception of gold and silver is people view it as price. I don't view it as price. I view it as just beating inflation. Mm-hmm. So I don't care if gold is...
Bitcoin's a good hedge against that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a little bit nutty.
Because, I mean, we haven't really seen it around too long, right?
Well, we're seeing our performance right now. So for me, if I'm looking at Bitcoin, and we talked about this a million times, the censorship resistance, the portability, the fact that it's open, anyone can participate. Like, I personally know funds putting in 1% to 2% of total allocation within Bitcoin, mm-hmm. just for the asymmetrical returns. And so for me, when I look at gold, the people's perception of gold, they think of it as like a stock, or they think of it as like real estate. It's not. The reason gold exists is to just keep your wealth. It's not to gain a lot of money. And you can look at it right now during inflation. Like, I don't care if gold is $22,000 an ounce. I'll put some allocation in gold, in real gold, not IOU certificates, actual gold bars, gold coins, whatever you want, you know. But what's those other, not coins, the other ones, ingots. And I just keep it to beat inflation. That's it. Mm-hmm. It beats inflation.
Yeah, it doesn't really perform the greatest. I know there's a lot of big gold bugs and silver bugs out there.
But remember, let's go back to thing. The biggest psychological problem people have is this. I got 20K, whatever, 20, 30K, and I want to invest. That's great. It's a great mindset to have. It's a great way to start to think as an operator, as an owner. But I wouldn't invest a penny in anything. The number one thing I would focus on is, how do you create more cash flow in your life? Cash flow is king, because mm-hmm. God forbid you worked very hard for that 20K, you invest in X, you go bust, you're fucked. You know, 4 years of your life.
Cash flow.
Depends on where you are in your life and what kind
right
of
now, I mean, let's talk in short term, like the next 1 to 3 years. What do you like for cash flow? Because things are going to change dramatically during that time.
E-commerce business are spiking like crazy. Get into e-commerce, digital products. I always tell people something short and simple. Like, if you have a really good skill, package it up and become a consultant, you know, mm-hmm. do some consulting gigs on the side for cash flow. I had a friend of mine, mother, I told her about this 2 years ago. She was a retired teacher and she did like artisan work, like refurbishing stuff. So she went around garage sales and picked up like old danky furniture, mm-hmm. and she had free time in her hands, 'cause she's retired. Right.
Yeah.
And so she refurbished this stuff really nice, man, like really fucking prime. And she's getting this furniture like pennies on dollar, like, here, have this table for $5, you know?
There's.
But she was chopping these fucking things on like Etsy for like $200-$300 afterwards.
Let me break down like the people that thrive in scenarios like this. Like, even a basic scenario, like, I know a guy that was doing cell phone arbitrage, right? Mm-hmm. So he'd find cell phones on local, clean them up a bit, sell them. He was making mm-hmm. about $1,000 to $3,000 a week minimum, right? Yeah. And then he saw an opportunity with dumbbells and kettlebells. I don't know if you guys have tried to order anything online right now, but
no, you can't.
There's certain things you just can't get. Like, I ordered a couple of books,
yeah,
like physical books, and yeah, they won't get delivered for a month from now.
Same here.
Something you'd normally get in like 3 days on Amazon. So there's certain things that you can't get. And one of the things that people are looking for right now, because there's a high demand, it's simple economic supply and demand, is, yep, you know, they want to work out from home. So yep, they're looking for kettlebells and dumbbells. So he's going around to the local classifieds and he's buying up, you know, dumbbells and kettlebells, and he's selling them on eBay. Mm-hmm. 25-pound dumbbells went for $250.
Wow.
Right? These things don't cost $250 to buy them.
Good for him, though, man.
So he made like $3,000 over a couple of days, right?
Good for him.
So there's some opportunities out there for you guys to capitalize in the chaos. You just have to go and look for them. It's like, okay, what is there in demand right now? Well, people want to work out from home. Well, how do I placate that demand? Okay, well, how do I find these devices? You know, I've seen people make their own home gyms, like mm-hmm. basically like jail yard gyms, where they do some woodwork and they take a bunch of leftover 2x4s from their mm-hmm. deck and they screw them all together and they make a bench, and they'll go and take mm-hmm. two cinder blocks and they'll put them on the end of a bar. It looks like the Flintstones, right?
Yeah.
So there's some interesting, you know, people out there doing some things to, you know, manufacture money to solve a problem out of thin air. So Juan gave a super chat there. Thanks, dude. He says, what should somebody do if they have a few $100s? I know somebody in that situation. I have a couple thousand and currently, thankfully, employed. That's not a lot of money. You're not going to put a dent in the universe with that amount. Hold on to the cash for now is what I would say. Maybe look for an opportunity to buy into the stock market or a fund or something like that. But you're like, a lot of people have asked me in the last couple of weeks, how do I turn my $700 into something? How do I turn my $5,000? You're not going to turn $5,000 into $100,000. The chances of you doing that, unless you invested in yourself in a business that you create that can exponentially grow that quickly, like that would be the best ROI. But most people aren't cut out to run their own business. They're just not made for it. What do you think, dude?
I always say invest in yourself. Like, get in the mindset of meta learning, get in the mindset of taking massive risk, obviously protecting your downside as well. You know, especially in these times, like, hey, listen, if the government's giving you checks and you can get your money, but don't waste your time. You know, time is the most important commodity we have. It's non-renewable, yet people don't care about it. The people just blow it. People's like, fuck it. You know, I'll waste my day watching Netflix or going on the news. I'm like, no shit. Like, listen, guys, people out there who are successful, and you can define success, whether it's finances or sports or whatever, they're ruthless.
And like, and I'll tell you something else.
Ruthless.
They're not watching Tiger King right now.
No.
A lot of people are watching that crap.
Like, I fucking work. I wake up at 6 a.m. and I work till midnight on stuff that I love.
Yeah.
I'll just work and work because I love it, man. I fucking love it.
Why should people listen to you, Amir? Because they're probably saying, why should I listen to this guy with a baseball hat with his knee up in the air? Like, what does he know?
Right? I didn't have my haircut.
Right. And I'll tell you, like, I met Amir at a conference, I don't know, about 10 years ago. And I know that, you know, you've been through some shit in your life and you shared a lot of those stories. I mean, you've been to jail, you've been involved in gangs.
Oh, I came out of jail. No one's going to hire me. I've been shot. I've been stabbed. I have two ODs. Like, like, I didn't have no fucking handouts.
Yeah. And you did this all, you know, you basically solved.
I never went to high school.
What was your last level of education?
They kicked me out. End of grade nine.
And I don't know how many companies I've seen you involved in or seen you consult on. Like, you've consulted on Luxy Hair, the 5-Minute Journal. You've worked with Reparo, which was a silver line underwear clothing line you did with your bro. I've lost count of all the companies that, you know, you're currently involved with Block Geeks, which is a blockchain sort of setup.
Yeah.
So you've been heavily involved in a lot of stuff, right? Digital products, physical products, information products, right? You've seen a lot of stuff, right? So when somebody is talking about these sorts of things, instead of, I mean, the default position for a lot of people is, well, why should I listen to him? And that's a good question to ask. And you should be asking that question. But once you got that out of the way, don't look for excuses. Look for reasons to follow and execute on the information that's been given to you. Because the vast majority of people right now, there's hundreds of people watching. There's going to be a lot of people that watch this after the fact as a recording. They're going to sit there and nod their head and yes, okay, I understand. That makes a lot of sense. I'm going to think about that. And then they go to sleep and they get up tomorrow morning and they watch the next episode of Tiger King or The Mandalorian on Disney Plus or some garbage like that. They don't do anything with it. It's execution that matters. Ideas mean nothing. And I don't think that people hear this enough, but ideas mean shit. You know, how many times you've had somebody say, hey, Amir, I got this great idea, but sign my NDA first. Or, hey, Amir, I got this $1 billion idea. And it's like, I laugh now, right? Whenever somebody sends me like, I got this idea, sign my NDA. It's like, get the fuck out of here.
I always say, why am I so blessed to have this on my desk?
Yeah.
Why am I the blessed one? Am I like the 50th person that you came to?
I hear that, man. Chris, we answered that question earlier. So yes, there will likely be that move. People will likely move. There's going to be a certain percentage of large urban city centers that are going to say, I'm not doing this anymore. It's too expensive. There's too much risk. I don't like all of these people. I don't like how they treated me during this time or what happened. And they're going to look for a simpler, easier, more spacious lifestyle with lower risk and lower cost.
My friend's a developer, you know, Midland, Ontario.
Yeah.
So my cottage is about 15 minutes south of Midland, Bond Beach area. Yeah, it's a good area. And so my buddy's a developer and he lived in Toronto. And 3 or 4 years ago, he moved to Midland, Ontario. I don't know if he bought a rent. I don't know. All I know is his overhead's only $2,200 a month, his beautiful location. Like $2,200 a month for like the most pristine type of like house on the water he lives over there.
trailer house, brick house? Like, what kind of house is it?
No, like beautiful bungalow on the water. It's gorgeous.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like estate. Like you're talking about like probably like 100 foot front yard, 300 foot backyard right on the fucking lake over there.
Yeah. Like I follow a couple of people on Instagram that are doing some home workouts right now. And you see the spread of space and land that they have. And I live in the suburbs. Like I live north of the Toronto area. So I'm not directly in the city, but I can get to the city very, very quickly if I want to. And it's like, I have it a certain amount of jealousy seeing them do all of these things on their land. Yeah. And it's a place that I think I'd like to get to personally at some point, because there's a lot more flexibility. You don't have to deal with neighbors. You don't have to worry about anything like this in the future if it ever happens again. Like you'll only see people if you want to see them, right? I mean, I have a friend that has some land with a pretty sized, decent house he bought. I can probably get to it in about 20, 25 minutes. And he has an entire room in his basement turned into a basically a gun safe. You know, he just basically turned the room into a gun safe. And it's a large room. It's about the size of the room that I'm in right now. And the entire walls from top to bottom are covered in guns. So we go over there and it's like, all right, what do you want to shoot? It's like, I'll take that one and let's bring that one down and this one. And you go for a 5-minute walk down to the ravine and he's got a range set up there and you can go do whatever you want on your land, right?
Amazing.
And you can't do that anywhere near the city, right? Everybody's so finicky and, oh, that's too noisy. You know, everybody's a snowflake. So, yeah, I think there's going to be, because of this chaos, because of the way that they're locking every down, they're yelling at you if you go to do push-ups in the park, if you're somewhere where they deem that you shouldn't be at that given time, you know, it's going to happen. Got another one here from Aaron. He said, being a low voltage electrician, insecurity is a great job for a young person to have in any kind of economic situation. Any kind of trades, guys, you can't really go wrong with trades. You're probably not going to, you know, put a massive dent in the universe and become a multi-millionaire many times over, but there'll always be a demand for competent skilled labor for things like that. It's always
going to. I have a thesis on that. If you're in the trades right now and you open up your own company, I think there's going to be a massive stimulus similar to World War II, where they're going to be building out the infrastructure to get people back in the economic workforce.
Yeah.
And like trades, like contrarian bet, get in the trade industry right now, man. I think the sky's the limit for that.
Yeah. I don't know that, you know, things like painters and drywallers will be required, but I think that engineering, sort like massive engineering type of projects, will be. Like they'll have to infuse the money into something.
Well, electrical, plumbing, HVAC, structural footings, like all this stuff is, plus a lot of that stuff, like you have the union side, like electrical you mentioned. So 353 is a union. I used to do business. I had a construction business as well back in the day. So we did work with the electrical union, which is 353 here in Ontario. And if, you know, depending on who you are in life and what kind of connections you have or what kind of connections you want to make, like if you're, here's something to take consideration. You might not necessarily be a trades person, but what trades people need is lead generation and proper business connection with contracts. So if you're a good person that can go out there and get jobs and get contracts, you just make arbitrage. You know what I mean? You're not necessarily. Like, you know, one of our friends I don't know what he does now, but Mike, you know, Mike Feldstein. That's all he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just drive traffic, make arbitrage off a price and see you later.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that one of the other things that we're going to see a large increase in is online type of communities. I got this friend of mine that was showing me this project. He's building it on the blockchain, but not like a currency or token base, but he's basically hosting online gaming competitions with a pool payout, and he takes a percentage of it for facilitating it. There's a lot of people, you know, sitting around playing video games, so why not compete online and make some money off it, right? So he's figuring out a way to do stuff like that. So I think that you're going to see and mass adoption, like a lot of interest. By the way, guys, I posted the link to join, so if you have a question, appreciate the questions in the chat. Love the super chats, you know, always welcome. But if you want to join and ask a question live, click that. Make sure you got like headphones in or something and a decent mic and a decent connection, so it's not going to break up apart. But yeah, you can hop in and ask live. But I think that out of this chaos, you're going to see more movement towards online communities.
Yeah. Right?
I'm already starting to see a rise in it. I'm seeing interest in my own community. I think there's going to be a pretty significant growth in that, because it's just an easier way to collaborate, get things done, to find like-minded people. And there's a lot of people that are a lot more used to doing things online now, especially over the last month or two. There's still a lot of people out there before this all happened that would prefer to get in their car or take the bus or go down to the store, get what they needed and come back now. Now it's widely accepted. Widely. I mean, the couriers coming up and down my street all day, going to people's houses all day long, all day long. I mean, I sit in front looking out in the street with the window that I'm in right now, but mm-hmm. all day long I can see it happening, and it's just going to build up. You're going to see more and more of it.
Here's a business opportunity that people can go into. You can make a localized delivery. So yeah. Very, very focused in the neighborhood where you can undercut Perlator or undercut all these other people. And you focus on a certain geographical area. Like, I think that's going to be pretty big.
We started to see the introduction of what's it called? Skip the Dishes. That was one of them. I mean, that's been going on here for a while. For those of you that watch somewhere else in the world, it's basically a food delivery service. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember going to a restaurant and sitting there, and there'd be at least 2, 3, 4 in the time that I was eating my meal.
Yeah.
I eat pretty fast. I'm done an hour tops. But there's a lot of couriers coming in, picking up meals, and they take them and they go and deliver them for people just because they don't want to leave their house, or they're too lazy, or they're too busy, or they got kids they got to take care of. They don't want to haul around. But I think you're going to see a lot more of these delivery services. I don't know. There's lots of opportunity. Whenever there's chaos, there's always opportunities. Always. I mean, some of the most successful businesses throughout history came out of chaos, out of the Depression, right?
Hershey chocolates, right out of the Great Depression.
What else came out of the Great Depression? Wasn't Rockefeller making Bucks Deluxe after that too?
Yeah, but Hershey was a big example because he was literally broke.
What was the story behind that, if you can tell it, because I'm not familiar with it?
So it was chocolates, and it wasn't really in vogue as it is today, the chocolate industry. And so he needed a way to kind of get the branding or the packaging a little bit different and better. So traditionally, let's say, you know, the chocolate is a chocolate bar, right? And so he was smart and he combined the romance part, the kiss part, because people are depressed. So it's kind of like a small kind of present of appreciation. So he then created those small, you know, we call them
the kisses.
They're smaller and they're cheaper though too, because it's, you know, the price per unit is X, but you just take a little piece of that fucking chocolate bar and put it up. So people can economically afford it because it's small and it's like a token of appreciation. So you had the romance part of it and it just it took off, man. Yeah.
Guys, opportunity is all around you.
There's so many things. Like I got in the online space in affiliate marketing. And I always say, people, if you want to get involved in the online space, do affiliate marketing first, because it's all upside with no downside. And it forces you to understand online marketing. It forces you to understand SEO. It's a skill
that you need in any business. I mean, if you can't market your product, or like some people go, oh, well, the product should sell itself. It's good enough.
Yeah. No. Okay.
On what planet do you live, my friend?
Peter Thiel's first rule of business is distribution. It's not the product.
Yeah.
So you need distribution. So you can get started in affiliate marketing today. You can make an audit of products that you like and guarantee 90% of those products have a referral program. People are wondering what affiliate marketing is you trying to trap.
Why not affiliate market dumbbells and barbells?
Totally.
Any kind of home workout type of equipment, you could affiliate market that. Where would they go? Is ClickBank still big, or is there something else?
ClickBank's huge. There's ClickBank. ClickBank, JB. So you can go Amazon affiliates as well. I think it's called Amazon Partners now.
Yeah.
Almost every fucking company out there has affiliate program.
Guys, listen, if there's dudes out there picking up dumbbells and kettlebells locally and selling 25-pound dumbbells for $225 on eBay, verified, I saw the screen. Do affiliate marketing for a company that does fitness equipment. I'm sure you can move the product and make some money. This is a good time to do it. I mean, if you've been sent home, you've been laid off, you got your $2,000 from the government, you know, you can twiddle your thumbs. You can go and watch the next episode of Tiger King, or you can go and do something with yourself and improve your value, right? If you're a guy, and I know most of my audience is men, it is incumbent upon you. You are required to, as a guy, to create value in your life. If you're a woman, you don't need to. You need to preserve your value. Women hate it when I say that. Doesn't matter. I don't care. It's true. But as a guy, it is incumbent upon you to create value. And what that means, you have to do something of some kind of significance. You have to demonstrate competency skills, not only for yourself, but to the world. Nothing turns off women and makes you very, very uninteresting to other guys than being a nobody. You have to be somebody in the world if you're a dude. I appreciate that. Thanks. We got a super chat there from Rumblefish.
Rumblefish. Thanks, man.
Rumblefish. The brutal truth.
A lot of problems.
Truth is cold and hard.
It is. Most people are Peter Pan syndrome or man-child syndrome, as Carl Jung talks about. So they're adolescent in adult bodies.
Women women love using that term on guys.
They're the same.
It's
different.
Like, you know, it's like the generic term. They're Peter Pan, mommy issues.
Which turns into... It's always turns something. Into the mother complex, which is the mother devouring the child. And this, in fact, is quite prevalent today. And so, like, if I would recommend people read up on Nietzsche's Übermensch, the metamorphosis required mentally to go through strife, to go through pain. Listen, guys, like, don't view pain in a negative connotation. Yeah, it sucks. Like, you're going to feel depressed and you're going to feel hurt and it's going to be like really bad. But there's very few human beings that are willing to go through it. Like I view it as like a superpower. It's like the amount of experience and knowledge and wisdom that you gain through going through the hero's journey and tackling something that you've never done before, that you have no experience in. Like no one can teach you this. The best things in life, no one can teach you. I forget who said that, but no one can teach you anything. You have to experience it yourself.
Yeah, I just posted the link there for the wiki page for Übermensch. I thought that I thought Nietzsche was just German. Was he Jewish?
Most definitely.
Mensch is Jewish, yeah.
Or it would be part Yiddish. So it's German, Hebrew, Yiddish, yeah.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, tomato, tomato. But Übermensch is a great philosophy. It's from going to the camel to the lion. Fighting the dragon is doubt. So let's talk about it. So you have the camel. The camel's analogy, let me put a load on the camel on the back. How much load can you put on yourself mentally? Then you evolve to the lion of strength. The lion has to fight its internal dragon. And the dragon guards things. The dragon is thou shalt. So the dragon is your ego. And the ego likes to protect narratives, right? Stories you tell yourself is like, I'm not good enough for this. She may not like me. Money is evil, right? So these are the programs that we have in our mind. And on the scale of the dragon are all these, thou shalt not do this, thou shalt not. But you as a lion, by first becoming the camel, getting the load, then graduating to lion, you got to fight the dragon. Once you fight the dragon and you win over the programming you have in your mind, you evolve then into the child of play. So you have the adult body, but you also have you view life as a playground. It's there for yours to play around, to do whatever the fuck you want to do. Everything happens in our life is based on our own mental limitations. And we have limitations. It's never like, oh, I just graduated. No, it's context, context, context. And so when you view the world as a kid, remember a kid, like, you know, you have a daughter and you see it firsthand. It's like, they don't have fear. They don't accept things as status quo. They always ask why? Why is this? Why is that? Everything's a playground for them. Everything's experience. Everything's fun. We need to become that. We need to view life as a fucking playground. It's like, hey, you want to start a business? Who the fuck's stopping you? Go. Hey, you want to, whatever the fuck you want, whatever. Like, I don't care what it is. You have the, especially here, right? You have the opportunity to do it. It's just the narratives in your mind that's stopping you from doing it.
Mm. Got a super chat here from Mike. Oh, Michael. Oh, Michael T. Michael. Books for meta learning.
The best book for meta learning is not directly meta learning, a skill, but it'll be meta learning knowledge. And that would be Mortimer Adler, How to Read a Book. So it's used as an analogy for reading a book, but the skills or the structures and heuristics they have in there can be applied to anything.
What's what book in your life, or maybe top two or three books, had the most impact on your belief system and got you better results?
Hero with 1,000 Faces, anything from Joseph Campbell, anything from Carl Jung. Short History of Carl Jung. What's the book? What would be a good introduction for Carl Jung? Let me pull it up. I forget the book's name.
I posted the join link if you guys want to hop on again. It's there in the chat.
The Portable Jung is a decent book, but more it's like psychology stuff. So The Hero's Journey, you know, The Hero to 1,000 Faces.
So not so much, hey, here's a biography on Elon Musk or Richard Branson. It's more psychology.
Nothing to me. Yeah, man. Like,
you know, and basically reading people, your beliefs, you know, how to view the world, basically the lens in which you operate, right?
Yeah, it's heuristics. So having having better software at your disposal to analyze and to take in information that you're both reading and viewing, and how does that portray or what does that mean towards you? Because it's true, like Einstein's equation of relativity, what you view is your truth and what I view is my truth, and we're both right. And so based on my context of my life, and
You've always been a hustler though, right?
Genetically, yes. But also that comes in negativity, right? I'm not the most detailed oriented person. I used to react quite selfishly and quickly based on my emotions as opposed to pausing. And that's why I got a lot in trouble when I was younger. So I was very dopamine driven, and I still am, but more, I understand myself more and understand why I behave this way. And I created systems to analyze myself.
Did you ever read The Edge Effect?
I know the book. I haven't read it. No.
Yeah. It's an interesting way to kind of like take a look at your, there's four main chemicals that drive your behavior with brain. I know you mentioned dopamine. I can't remember what the other three were. I read the book last summer, but there's certain things that you can apply to your diet to kind of balance that out as well, too. I thought that was an interesting book as well.
Oh, when I changed my diet, that helped me a lot. So when I got into health space about 12 years ago, and I changed, I quit drinking. I haven't had alcohol in 10 years. And you know me, I've been pretty focused on health.
Do you still get involved in, what did you call it? Psychonautics?
Yeah. Not right now though, but I got to wait till I go to my car. I have to be in nature. I can't do it in home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does that look like for you, generally speaking? I mean, I've played around with, psilocybin up at Cottage Country, you know, once or twice. It's been interesting. How does that help?
Oh, it's helped me a lot. So it depends, like, you know, you have different protocols, whether it's like MDMA or whether it's psilocybin, whether it's Iboga or LSD, or there's a bunch of other ones like 5-MeO-DMT, which I haven't done that, but I've done DMT. So for me, it would be more or less a combination of psilocybin and MDMA. So something would look, it all depends on how deep you want to go.
Do you have them facilitated, or do you set intentions before, or you just
So I'll run through the whole thing. Set and setting, most important thing. Usually for psilocybin, I'll do like 3 grams. I haven't done a hero's journey, which is 5 grams plus in a very long time. So 3 grams is where I like my comfort zone.
What's the difference between a hero's journey and a heroic journey?
Same thing.
Same thing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So 5 grams plus, give or take. And I've done like a lot. I've done 10 grams. Like I've gone through dimensions. And so basically with the 3 grams set and setting, so let's say it can be anywhere, but it has to be in nature, you know, rent Airbnb a cottage or go to my cottage or whatever, a friend's cottage. And each room is set up a certain way. You have the ambiance in the space, you have candles. So the set and setting is really important. You can have your phone then with you that you have an app for recording, simple pen and paper. And then you just go through the experience, have a good playlist of music that you like. And then when things come up, you know, depending on how you want to capture what you're feeling, you either say it on your phone or you write it down. And then depending on how you're feeling, you can step outside, go into the forest, and that gives you a different experience. You can go to a different room that you set up that has a different ambiance. That gives you a different experience because your environment dictates how you are going to feel that trip.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's interesting, man. I gotta look into that a little bit more this summer. Dave, I got you in the waiting area, but it says device is not connected. So I'm not sure how to introduce you. So maybe leave and come back in if you can hear me. So we talked about psychonautics. We talked about book learning, meta learning, economy. You know what I want to hit on that we haven't talked about yet that I know you're really well versed on is, politics and government.
Yeah.
And Let's kind of look mostly at the U.S. side of things, because Canada, like, there's really nothing to talk about over here, right? In Canada, we got Justin Trudeau, whatever. You know, I follow Maxime Bernier, and I like the guy, but I don't think
he shouldn't have split. A horrible mistake.
Yeah. I don't think you're ever going to see a libertarian government. I don't think I'll ever see it in my lifetime.
Well, libertarian anyway. Governments are also an oxymoron, because the whole point of libertarian government is not to have a government.
It's very small and no government. Yeah, I know. You're right. What do you think of the political situation right now out there? You know, more specifically in North America, more specifically in the U.S.
I can't believe that the Democratic candidate or leader is Joe Biden. That guy.
Is he the official leader?
Pretty much.
So Bernie Sanders is, don't want to be it.
Yeah.
That guy doesn't even know where he is half the time when you hear him talk.
But with the latest development, there could be a probability. And also too, we don't know what's going to happen with the COVID and state-by-state election. So they're still debating whether the election cycle. That being said, though, there is a probability because of how they liked how he handled the situation, that they might consider him as Democratic candidate to run against Trump.
Dude, my stapler would be a better candidate than Joe Biden. Honestly, I don't know how that's even a conversation.
If it comes down to Biden and Trump, Trump wins in a landslide.
Well, you'd think. You'd think, but dude, all I hear online all day, I mean, any social platform that I go on when I have to go on it, it's people whining and moaning and complaining about Trump.
Well, let me put it this way. That's Trump derangement syndrome.
And I have most of those people muted or I don't follow them, right? But it still shows up in the feed.
Here's a problem with them. And here's a problem with people who are Trump crazy supporters. They're both the same, and I'll tell you their problem. They believe that somebody must dictate and control their life. Regardless of if it's Trump or some other random guy, the very notion that you are stating that these people are necessary to govern your life. Mm. The whole system itself is a fraud, complete fraud.
Well, most people are sheep. Like, they believe they need a leader. They believe they need to bend the knee to the supreme, whoever it is at the time. And,
Chomsky said it the best. There's only one party in power, and that's a political party, regardless if it's left or right. Yeah. You know, they're both the same side of the coin. And people complaining.
I mean, my life doesn't change either way. It's either the taxes go up or slightly down, or there's not much difference, right?
That's a mental issue with people. I see people have such ideological connection either with Trump or against Trump. And I'm like, you guys realize it's the exact same people, exactly the same.
Do you ever get to the point where you just kind of like find it entertaining and you just see these people freaking out and losing their shit all day long and hating on a guy that they'll never meet, who's like the leader of the most powerful? Like, I always laugh whenever, like, I have conversations sometimes with some mutual friends that we have. Some of them are more left-leaning. In fact, most of them are more left-leaning. And they'll just start like shitting on Trump. And I'm like, dude, you're the president of a t-shirt company, and he's the president of the most powerful country in the world. Why are you mad?
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, people just, they have nothing better to do with their time than to get mad and yell at politics. And it's like, look within yourself. This is the area that you can control. You know,
also, people need to understand,
all the problems you have right now are because of whoever's leading your country. You think that's why you have a shitty life? Your life sucks because you made bad choices. That's all that it boils down to.
Politics is an act of aggression, regardless of where you stand on. It's my way or the highway. I dictate the rules. I dictate the policy. It takes a certain type of psychological makeup to have that type of mental design to say, I want all your votes and I know what's best for you. No, Richard, you don't know what's best for you. I know what's best for you. I know exactly how you're going to live your life.
Everybody's been conditioned for that. Everybody, their entire life. Let's march down and vote. What was the thing the other day? There was some nonsense about how do I vote from home? You know, I want to do all my voting from home now because of the situation.
It's crazy, man. People are crazy.
like the situation. All right, Dave, I see you got your camera up and your audio, so let's throw you in. What's shaking? You're muted. You're muted. There you go. And boom.
There we go.
Unmuted.
Well, I'm working from home, but I don't know how long. I work for a small business that is highly dependent on selling computer gear to, you know, state, local, government, education, hospitals, that kind of thing. So our sales force isn't out hitting the streets. So I'm in the technology side, so I'm not going to be doing a lot. And I've been looking at my own situation, and if my paycheck stops, I've got some income through my military retirement, but it's not going to be enough. So I'm starting to look at, you know, okay, I'm going to not pay this bill. I'll pay this bill, not pay this bill, and I'll just wait and see what happens. But it's not that bad yet.
Yeah, let me tell you something about paying bills, because this happens to be my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Anything that's credit card, anything that's unsecured debt, I'm going to tell you something about unsecured debt. Credit card balances, unsecured lines of credit, overdraft, any of those things. It's not collateralized like a mortgage or a car loan, for example. So collateralized loans would be like a mortgage, because if you don't pay, they take your house.
Yeah.
But anything that's not collateralized, that's the first thing that you don't pay. And you can go bankrupt. You can discharge it. You can settle the debt. You can hire a company to settle the debt. You can settle the debt your own. That's not that big of a deal, right? I mean, if anything, let the balances accumulate the interest. Whatever happens, happens. They start calling you. They'll send you threatening notices. They're probably not going to do anything. In fact, I can tell you right now, they're going to be pretty motivated to either take a look at a proposal, whether it comes from an insolvency trustee or a bankruptcy or bankruptcy lawyer or a settlement company like mine does. They're going to be willing to, they're going to be quite motivated to take something than not, because of the market conditions, because of the number of people that have been out of work. So that's, don't even worry about your credit card balances. Just make sure you got a roof over your head and food in your stomach. Don't worry about the credit card balances.
Yeah. Those are the two, those are the two solid things I've got is the mortgage is covered. I don't have any car payments, so that's not going to go away. I'm in a pretty good position from a, I've stacked some stuff. I got my bullets. I got my food. But you know, it's one of those things that, you know, I'm 2 years away from retirement, and it's like, oh my God, you know, my whole plan is going to like turn to shit in a heartbeat here if this thing doesn't free itself up a little bit.
Let me ask you a question, because you're an ex-military guy. So how many rounds do you keep at any given time for preparedness?
Well, you know, there's numbers. So a basic infantryman, like carries an M16, has 30 round magazines. His basic combat load is 290 rounds. That's 7 30-round magazines. Mm-hmm. And if you've never held onto or had to wear 7 30-round magazines, that's a lot of freaking weight. Mm-hmm. So it's not the amount of rounds, it's how much can you carry. And that's also in your bug-out bag, and how much can you carry in your trunk in addition to your, you know, 3 or 4 gallons of water and maybe 5 gallons of fuel. So it's,
you do, you have a bug out bag for you and your wife?
I've got 3, but you know, they haven't been totally prepped. But some of the stuff is like, you're gonna go out your back door and you're gonna go and live in a park somewhere and trap animals, like, you know, squirrels or whatever. There's a lot of fallacies in just bugging out. Like, I'm just outside of Seattle. For me to go into some place where I could actually hunt, you know, that's like a 3 to 4 hour drive.
You know, that's funny. I was watching a segment that Joe Rogan did. I can't remember who it was that asked him, but somebody asked him, what would you do if the shit hit the fan? And he's a hunter, right?
Yeah.
And I think he said something like, I'd probably be screwed within a certain period of time, especially being so close to LA.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, it's a lot harder than you think. It's not likely that it's going to get there. I mean, the situation is being controlled to some degree. It's not being controlled in a way that's conducive to individuals. It's for control and power, really, is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. This is one of the
Survival Guide.
Yeah, and it kind of goes into, okay, chances are you're not going to get out, but you need to stock these kind of things, you know, like certain kinds of food. You're going to want water, depending on where you're at. Are you in a single family house? Are you in a high rise apartment that's, you know, you're on the 30th floor? You know, those are the kind of things that you have to address.
Would you be okay if your salary disappeared?
I wouldn't be okay, but I have a couple of options.
Would you be okay if your salary and your military pension disappeared?
The military pension, that would hang me up by my thumbs. I'd be in a world of hurt.
Okay. Got it.
You know, because my wife is drawing.
And that could potentially happen, right? I mean, you know, you lose your job, you lose your salary. The government decides, you know what? We're no longer paying out pension disbursements. We don't have the ability to do so. Not likely it's going to happen. I mean, they'll just keep printing money. We were talking about that from the get-go.
Especially for the military.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't want to piss off the guys with the guns, right?
And the bullets. But, you know, I've got other skills. I've got, you know, I can do drywall. I can do machine tool work. I can do welding. I can do, you know, woodworking, that kind of stuff. So I've got other skills. I can do plumbing if I need to. Electrical would be a little touchy, but, you know, I can survive. So, those are those.
What are you doing at the computer company?
I'm a, I guess you, it's a pre-sales engineer. So when the sales guys say, hey, we think we can get one of these. Well, how much does he, you know, how big does it need to be? How wide does it need to be? How fast does it need to be? Those are the kind of things that, you know, I answer those technology questions.
So wouldn't you say this is like a transferable skill, specifically since you're dealing with like governments and big companies, so another type of supplier who is a competitor to yours?
Well, yeah, we're a Hewlett Packard Enterprise.
We're Hewlett Packard.
Yeah, so our competition is Dell, IBM, Lenovo. Yeah. So, yeah, I can keep the technology side, but I've also got, you know, like you say, the trade skills type stuff that I can, you know, that I can rely on as well. So I can do a lot of my own work. I don't have to depend on somebody else. So that's a good thing.
Well, it sounds like you got your head on right. Mm-hmm. This chaos really isn't going to do much for you. I mean, has it affected you either way? Has it made things worse at all?
Boredom is going to be my problem.
Because you're stuck at home.
Yeah, I'm stuck at home. Yeah. I don't have a technology lab that I actually need to work in because I have a couple of problems that I need to go fix in the technology side, but I can't even go to the gun range. You know, it's like that would be something that I would want to sharpen my skills on. There's actually one range that is open because they have to stay open for, you know, police departments and, you know, first responder training and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I may have to go inventory my bullets and check my primers and cartridge cases and see what else I can do if I get really bored.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see anything that bad as far as chaos goes. But I mean, it sounds like you got yourself in a position where you're in pretty good shape as long as it doesn't go sideways for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hunkering down. I'm you know, because I'm a military guy. I've done planning. You know, you think about contingency plans and like, what's, you know, here's the first step. If it goes to this level, what's your next step? You know, so you're always coming up with, you don't walk around and not have a plan.
Mm-hmm. And family's going to rely on you for that, right? You got kids, wife, they're all looking at Dave.
Yeah. The wife is here and she knows how to shoot.
Skill to know.
Yeah, I took her to a front sight 4-day defensive handgun course like 3 years ago, and it's like, don't piss this woman off. She can hit targets.
So, all right, Dave, I'm gonna pull you out. Josh, you're gonna come in next. Thanks. Cool. Hey, man, what's your situation if stuff gets crazy and you need to rely on defense, hand-to-hand combat? I mean, you're obviously a strong guy. You've got competency skills from there, but what about combat for you?
What do you mean, like hand-to-hand fighting?
Well, more than hand-to-hand fighting, right?
Number one rule of combat is don't be in the situation of combat.
Don't put yourself at risk, right?
Yeah, man, like, bro.
You're in the city, though. Like, do you... Are you a licensed gun owner or anything, or no?
No.
Most people in Canada aren't, though, dude.
I'm not too worried for me, man. Most people, when shit hits the fan, I can take care of myself. I can go bug out on my cottage.
Yeah.
Toys up there.
You got yourself set up there, right?
Yeah, it's a pretty good setup. Big iron gate.
Josh, what's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What's shaking, man?
Not too much. I got a question.
Yeah.
Questions maybe about affiliate marketing. But first things first, I just want to agree with you on the basic income. The problem with basic income too is that because I'm in a wheelchair, I live in like low income housing, right? And I look out my front my office window here, and I can see 6 townhouses, and the single moms just sit on the and their husbands too. They sit on their porch all day, smoke cigarettes. They're on their phone all day, drinking Tim Hortons coffee. Like, they got money, lots of money.
From the government. Canadian, Timmy's.
We take really good care of those people.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just an hour west of you guys. Oh, and cool. So these people on welfare or whatever, they're just still useless human beings, right? Like, the universal basic income isn't going to fix.
They're like sponges, really. Yeah. What it is, they just suck up stuff.
Well, they're votes, so you have to look at the system. They guarantee votes when it comes to election cycle.
Yeah, don't even get me started on who should be able to vote and who shouldn't be able to vote. But yeah,
100%. I don't think they should be able to vote at all. Okay, so I got some questions about affiliate marketing. Just a couple of quick questions, like, do you think it should be cheap or expensive products? Does that matter? What kind of content should I put it with? Like, should it be video? Should it be blogs? And then, are there like really hot products that you think are good right now, like weed, CBD? And then, are there any products like, don't do that, stay away from that?
Good questions. Okay, so question two: have you ever done it before?
What very, very little. I got one like nootropic supplement a little bit on a couple videos, and I think I made one sale.
Hey, one sale's good. I remember the first time I made a dollar online. It's a great start, man.
$6.
It's awesome.
All you need is somebody to give you $1 to prove that you know how to do something.
Exactly.
At least start.
The question for cheap or expensive, I don't think so matters. I think it's just more or less focusing on the skill set. So that really doesn't matter. Once you get your skill set going and you really understand what you're doing, then it's very easy for you to pivot to another product. And more or less, you're probably doing a couple of products. Now, as for CBD, I wouldn't get that granular. It's like very semantic, whether it's like CBD or whether it's nootropics or something. I would more or less be like, okay, how much time am I going to dedicate per day? Let's say 1 to 2 hours you knock off. And am I actually going to hold myself accountable? Like anything in life, people will start something and like, oh, this is too hard. I give up. You know what I mean? Like, and so for me, it's more or less like, listen, you've already done it. You made $6 and it's great. So you understand the system that it works. I would be focusing on, I want to guarantee that I spend 2 hours a day. I want to hold myself accountable. If you have any friends, get them to hold yourself accountable as well. Pretend you run the business. And so have yourself KPI. So it's like, what do I want to achieve? And make some crazy ballpark thing, like something that you can't hit. Like, I'm a big believer when it comes to like hitting goals, make it so fucking outrageous that even if you get to 80% of the goal, you're way ahead of anybody else. And then your question about like, how do you do it? So you mentioned like, whether it's like videos or content or that, I think it matters also. It matters the product that you're selling, like whatever you end up picking. Let's say, for example, I don't know, like CBD, for example, you end up picking that, right? And there's different things of CBD. It can be CBD smoking, CBD vape. Like, I don't know, there's a million fucking CBD products out there. I would, for the most part, figure out, okay, well, how is media consumed in this industry? because that you want to figure out where the eyeballs are. You know, when I was in the affiliate marketing space, I was in the health space, and primarily all the stuff that we did is we did a Web 2.0 YouTube videos back in the day, because that's where the audience and eyeballs were. It wasn't primarily just like web-based text content. It was more or less video content. So we focus on YouTube or video in general. And so let's say CBD, you end up finding that a lot of people are finding CBD products from Pinterest, for example, I don't know, or Instagram. I don't know the industry, so I'm just pulling shit out of my ass right now. But let's say it is Instagram. Okay, let's figure out how do you double down on Instagram. What are some hacks you can do? Like top of my mind, you can buy pre-existing Instagram accounts already. Use it as a dumb account to a test. Like Google, buy Instagram account. And now this Instagram account isn't necessarily going to be like your de facto primary brand, but this is your experiment account that you can fuck around and do whatever you want to do. Doesn't matter. You buy this account for cheap, like $100 or something like that, and you start experimenting. You see other brands what are doing. You type in keywords like marijuana, CBD, CBD oil on Instagram, and you see all these other types of brands and what they're doing on there. And you're like, okay, there's a formula that works. You know, Picasso has a great saying: good artists copy, great artists steal, and it's like an homage. And so you see the type of creative that works, like these types of images work, these types of copy work. And you start implementing this on your Instagram account, obviously with your affiliate link, maybe on every account, and you see what works. And you start getting the hang of things. And then maybe you figure out, okay, Instagram doesn't work. Maybe Pinterest or maybe YouTube. And it's experiment at the end of the day, like doing a lot of due diligence, figuring out what people are doing currently, then doing it yourself.
Rip off and duplicate.
Yeah, in your own twist, yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right, yeah. Thanks, Amir. Thanks, Rachel.
No worries.
See you, bro. Josh, brother, you're an inspiration. Big respect from High Value Mail. Yeah. Chris, I'll pull you in, and you'll be the last one for the night, and then we'll wrap it up. You're muted right now, by the way.
Okay. Hey, Amir. What'd you do more about the developing the self-discipline? And I've noticed you're a psychonaut. Have you also tried ayahuasca?
The full ayahuasca experience, no. I've probably done everything but ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca doesn't look appealing to me, man. I've watched ceremonies and it doesn't look like...
Yeah.
I would never recommend it if anyone has never or no one has ever tried any psychedelics. I would always recommend having a babysitter first and finding somebody to facilitate and help you out. I would definitely start with maybe even not even like a true psychedelic, but more maybe MDMA. Obviously, caveat, guys, a huge fucking caveat. If you're on benzos or SSRIs or some type of pharmaceutical drug, that's a no bueno, as we say. So definitely consult your doctor. And if you're on any of these drugs, it does conflict. That being said, if you're not on any of these conflicting medications, then I would definitely start small, like anything. You can even start smaller with like microdosing. So 0.2, 0.3 of psilocybin in capsules, that's been pretty good results for a lot of people out there.
Yeah, I'm already very experienced with ayahuasca. Just want to let you know, I know all about the contraindications and things like that. I've been to Peru, so yeah.
Oh, nice, nice, yeah. Yeah, so that's the only one I haven't done the full ceremony yet. Yeah, yeah.
Did you come away from that a better, different, changed person? Like, what was that like for you? I'm always curious if somebody's experienced with that.
It really, I think I have a lot more integration in my head, and I actually do believe that it helped improve my eyesight.
Really?
Yes. There are some applications too. For example, if you Google ayahuasca and Parkinson's, there's some promise there with neuro. And there was a woman at my retreat who had ALS.
You want to hear the craziest story of a psychedelic? I read anecdotal, so from British Columbia. So there's a lot of interesting scientific literature when it comes to neurogenesis, when it comes to psychedelics, primarily done on psilocybin. There's some stuff on ayahuasca and very interesting stuff done on iboga. The anecdotal stuff they did on LSD. So this story is it's fucking insane. How do I say this story? Okay. They had a group of people, and this is in the 70s or 80s, mind you. So this is all first person, the people who actually got into experience telling the story. So in the 70s, I think it was. And they were at a party, and a friend brought LSD, put it in the water bottle. And the dose was something like 400 to 500 times a regular dose. And the dose is called mics. So this is like 400 to 500 mics greater than a regular dose of LSD. all of them end up in the hospital because they don't know what they're experiencing. They're all fine after like whatever, 24 hours. But the interesting thing was one woman there was clinically diagnosed with bipolarism, and she had spells throughout her whole life going through a bipolar disease. After this incident, and this journalist, whatever, found her years after this incident, she's never had a spell again, ever. Her bipolar stopped.
Wow.
It's crazy. It's the craziest thing ever.
There's clinics now, and I just invested in one. I'm sure you got the offer as well, too, right?
Yeah.
There's clinics now. I just put some money in that. I mean, they're starting with ketamine. They're going to be getting into psilocybin once they can get the regulatory approval for it. But I think that's going to be the next big thing because it's clearly, to me, as far as I can see with the evidence, a far better way to deal with certain like trauma, like PTSD and stuff like that as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think that's a big opportunity coming out of this in the future anyway. I mean, it doesn't directly tie into what's happening right now and the chaos that's going to come. But I don't know, maybe they'll use it to treat people that come through it.
It helps to solve, depending on how you're integrating, as Chris said, integration is the most important thing. Most people will take it and don't have any post-integration. Mm-hmm. Same thing when people will listen to a video of Rich or read a book and like, oh, well, where's the action? Where's integration? How are you actually implementing this in your life? And what's really good about, let's say, ayahuasca, or if people want to do 5-MeO-DMT or Hero's Journey of psilocybin, is it forces them to face the narratives that they've been telling themselves their whole life. And it's not like all at once. It's not like, oh my God, hallelujah, I feel great afterwards. But you have more of a, as Chris said, an interesting connection between your predisposition of who you thought you were and what stories ran through your mind. And it forces you, it's like meditation condensed 20 years into one session. Mm. And it forces you to challenge your narratives and to question, not even question, but kind of, like I put it akin to an onion. You have an onion and you peel a layer and there's a new version of you and a different version. And you keep on peeling till you get to the core, the child version of yourself. And it's like through osmosis, you kind of slowly start understanding yourself a little bit better and understanding why you think a certain way.
Hmm. Cool. Chris, thanks for hopping on, bro.
Thanks. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Have a great night, Chris.
We're at the 90-minute mark, so we can wrap it up. I'll pull us off air. Thanks for hopping on, Amir. Appreciate
my pleasure,
you
man.
Just shooting the shit and hanging out for a bit and talking about this. If you're not subscribed to Amir's channel, he puts out a lot of content. Amir Rosic, you can just look him up. AmerRosic, just on YouTube that way. Check out his channel and subscribe to his stuff. See you guys in the next one. We'll catch up with you guys very, very soon. Peace out.
Peace.